Hello, my name is Craig Barton, and welcome to the Tips for Teachers podcast, the show that helps you supercharge your teaching one idea at a time. This episode, I had the pleasure of speaking to former primary head teacher and now advisor Claire Seeley, and it is a good one. Sponsor slots for the podcast are now open, so if you want to let the world's most interesting listeners know about your book, product or event, just drop me an email. Two things to remind you before we get cracking. You can view all the videos of Claire's tips, plus the tips of my other guests, plus a load of videos from me on the Tips for Teachers website. And secondly, you can sign up to the Tips for Teachers newsletter to receive a tip in your inbox on Monday to try with your classes in the coming week. And finally, if you do find the Tips for Teachers podcast useful, this is a big one, this. I'd be really grateful if you can just take a moment, ideally now, just pause the podcast and give us a quick review on your podcast player of choice. It really does make a difference. Thank you. Okay, back to the show. Let's get learning with today's guest, the wonderful Claire Seeley. Spoiler alert, here are Claire's five tips. Tip one, every teacher should make the teaching of literacy a high priority. Tip two, be super clear about what you want children to learn. Number three, always check for understanding. Tip four, I love this one, no feedback, more teaching. And tip five, have a robust culture of retrieval. As ever, if you look at the episode description or your podcast player, you'll see that I've timestamped each of these tips so you can jump straight to anyone you want to listen to first or re-listen. Enjoy the show. Well, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Claire Seeley to the Tips for Teachers podcast. Hello, Claire, how are you?
Hi, Craig. Great to see you. I'm fine, thanks.
That's great to hear. For the benefit of listeners, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, ideally in a sentence?
Okay, so my present job, which I've been doing for 2.5 years, is I'm head of education improvement for the states of Guernsey, which is in the Channel Islands, for those of you who don't know. But previously to that, I worked for 22 years as head teacher at St. Matthias Primary School in Tower Hamlets in East London.
Fantastic. Right, let's dive straight in. What's your first tip you've got for us today?
Okay, well, this may seem obvious to some people, maybe less obvious to other people, but that every teacher, no matter what age you teach and what subject you teach, should make the teaching of literacy a high priority for themselves. Now, that includes, as I said, every subject. So it includes, you know, PE teachers and math teachers who may go, yeah, but that's not my priority because I'm a PE teacher or I'm a math teacher. But fair enough. That's true. And obviously it has to be done in a way that is sympathetic to the fact that if you're teaching PE, like a lot of the time, you should be teaching PE, you know, running around teaching kids how to move and stuff. But if you're doing maths, similarly, you know, neither of them are subjects that have a great deal of narrative around them. However, and, you know, obviously a geography teacher or a history teacher or obviously a primary school teacher will spend more of their time teaching literacy because their subjects lend itself to that. And that's fine. But even if you're, say you're a PE teacher, you should use some of the time, and I'm talking like, you know, 2-3 minutes a day, a lesson rather. So it's not, I'm not saying a long time, and yes, most of the time I should be doing physical things and learning physical things, but when you can, you should use those opportunities. So for example, I'm going to give you an example. If you're a PE teacher, you learn, and I'm sorry, I want to check my notes here. So if I'm looking that way, I am checking my notes. You have to learn about components of fitness. You know, you learn about them at GCSE, but obviously you can learn about them in Key Stage 3. You can learn about them in Key Stage 2. You can begin to learn about them in Key Stage 1. So one of those is agility. So if you're going to learn about agility, here's a definition, which I'm obviously going to read. Agility is the ability to move and change direction and position of the body quickly and efficiently while under control. It requires quick reflexes, coordination, balance, speed, and correct response to a changing situation. So there's a definition. Obviously, it needs to be unpacked and explained and so on and so forth. But here's an example of, we can help children with illiteracy, which will pay dividends in every subject and will pay massive dividends in terms of life chances for our students. We can do that in every subject by where it fits in and doesn't undermine the key purpose of a subject, we can get children reading. So how I would do that as a PE teacher, I want them to know about agility. I will read the sentence. I will read, agility is the ability to move and change direction and position of the body quickly and efficiently while under control. So I will read that really well. I will model how to read that really well. And then we will read it together as a class. We'll all read it together as a class. And then we might go, and now turn to your partner and read it. Now I'm going to read it again. Now who wants to, anyone wants to volunteer to read it? That's it. Then you go off and you do your normal PE stuff. So you're just going, I'm not going to tell you a definition. We're actually going to read it. In maths, I don't think reading out definitions of what a denominator is particularly helpful. I mean, you can do it, but I don't see that's where math teachers can do their bit for literacy. I'm not saying don't do it, but I don't think that's the key thing, because actually those definitions, you know, if you try and say a denominator, the definition's harder than the concept, frankly. But what you can do is, you know, those word problems that kids, they go, but is it an ad? You have this big word problem, like, but is it an ad, sir? Okay. And one of the reasons why kids find word problems, they might understand the operations, but they don't understand how to apply the maths onto this wordy word problem, is because of something called prosody. So prosody is the sound, tone and pace with which, the music, if you like, of language. And different genres of writing have different prosodies. So if I read a story, that will have a different, you know, once upon a time, da 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 da, a different sound and tone to if I'm reading a piece of nonfiction, or, you know, an explanation in science example, or a maths problem. Now, the thing about maths problems is nobody reads them for pleasure. Well, maybe you do, Craig, but very few people read them for pleasure, and you never hear them read out loud. And actually, you need to know how they sound, because how they sound in English and in lots of languages, there's lots of stuff that isn't in the text that indicates which words to stress and which words are important. And there's nothing written that tells you that. You just sort of pick it up. So, you know, I should have written down a maths problem to read out loud, and I haven't. So bad preparation on my part. But it might have something. Craig has £10. I want to add the word each. Of course, I thought of a really crappy word problem. Now I'm just thinking off the top of my head. But, you know, each sweet he wants to buy costs da 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 da. I'm doing it really wrong. I can't think of a word problem off the top of my head. But there's words like each or every or in total or da 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 that in a sentence, in a word problem, or you would stress those words. Craig has 5 biscuits. He wants to give each of his friends 1 biscuit each. He has, I can't remember, 5 friends. That's a really easy word problem. But you know what I mean? There's things like each of his friends. He has 5 biscuits. You need to know how to stress those words in the sentence in order for it to make sense. And then people aren't going to learn to do that unless you as a teacher read it out in real pantomime style. And intuitively, we as sort of experts know which words to stress. There's one about, you know, about a calendar and how many days are there in November, December, and December. And it's like, and, you know, we go, because we want to know it's all of them together. And these are when children do maths problems, they don't read the problem, not because they can't read the words. They know the words, but they don't understand the sentence because they're not used to the prosody. They're not used to reading it as a maths problem. So I'm really sorry. I should have picked out a maths problem to give an example, and I'm failing terribly to think of one. But you get the idea. So as a maths teacher, not every lesson, you know, for hours and hours and hours, but for a couple of minutes, I'm going to read you the question out loud, and I'm going to pantomime reading it in my best, like, performance voice. And then we're going to practice it. We're going to maybe chorally read it all together. And then maybe we do another one, just so that we get used to hearing the sounds of sentences. So that's my top tip, literacy for everybody.
I love it. Right, let's dig into this a little bit. So the first thing to say is, Claire, I am clueless. One thing I'm completely clueless about is reading. And we had Chris mm-hmm. Such on the show, and he's given good kind of lesson and overview. So I'm all over it now. So this is right up my street, what you're talking about. So a couple of things to say. I see, when you say literacy to me, and I think with my math teacher yeah. hat on, I think of two problems immediately spring to mind that students tend to struggle with. So one is whenever you ask students to write longer form prose-based answers to maths problems, they struggle. So, you know, explain why, discuss, describe. Students really struggle on that.
Yeah.
And I find that really hard to help students out with. The second is maths is full of technical language, and a lot of it, you get these polysemous words that, you know, obviously mean different things in maths than they do in the rest of the world, like
yeah.
similar and frequency. They're problematic. But I've never thought to do that before, what you're speaking about there. The word problems, and they are a massive problem for kids, exactly as you say. Whenever you show them how to do it, they say, oh, if I'd have known that, I would have been able to do it. But of course, the skill is knowing, you know, how to do it in the first place. I've never thought to read it out loud like that. It's always like the things on the board. And I always say to the students, okay, read the problem, highlight the keywords and so on. But I've never kind of stepped in there myself as, you know, a so-called expert to read it out. So I really, really like that idea. So that's in the bank now. I'm just wondering, with that kind of communication style thing, any thoughts on that? How can I get my kids better at the written form of literacy, if that makes sense?
Well, the key thing is, and I'm sure you've heard this before, they can't say it, they can't write it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
they need to be able to, they need to be encouraged to say it. And, you know, all the usual tricks of like, how can we say it? Talk partners. So, oh, thank you, Amanda. That was great. Can we make it better? So pushing for the best, the best sentence even said orally, and then writing that down, and then you can write it down. And the other thing is, there's an idea, this is one of Doug Lamov's one, I can't remember what it's, well, he's got obviously some buzzword for what it's called, but the idea of just get them to write, it doesn't matter if it's a bit crap, you know, get them to write whatever it is. And it's not very good, and that's fine. So it goes, you know, denominator, what's a fraction? It's when you put it in bits. Okay, that's fine. That's a starting point. It is when you get it in bits. Now, can we work on that? Now, you know, it's when you get it in each. We usually say bits, and you say parts. Okay, so is it just parts? No, it's about equal parts. And, you know, and bit by bit, you can go back and back and back and back and back. And just for a little time, you know, using whiteboards. Whiteboards are great. Kids will write on whiteboards, which they don't like. For some reason, they just like the fact that if it's wrong, it doesn't matter on a whiteboard. You know, if it's in a book, it's like, oh, no, it's going to be perfect. And that hampers them. So, yeah, speak it, write it. Or even sometimes write it down, even if you're really reluctant, write something. I don't care if you just write fraction, bits, parts, thing, half, I don't know. And then we'll talk. And then go back to your writing, write a bit more, then we'll talk some more, write a bit more. So that back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I think it was Doug Lamov. It's like David Dido's talked about this again as well. It's like a 0 to 5K approach. You know, you're building writing stamina. That it's not, we're not going to be frightened of this. We're going to write for 10 seconds. Like everyone is going to be writing, whatever you write, it can be. I don't, like, just have a go.
That's nice. Absolutely love that one. That's brilliant.
So, you know,
okay,
10
Claire.
Seconds, then up to 15, then up to 20, or whatever, you know. It's math, so you're not going to do it for very long.
Brilliant. Okay, Claire, what is tip number two that you've got for us today, please?
So tip number two, it's actually interesting because you want five tips, don't you? And I did a piece for the teachers here, and I talked about my five sort of planks of quality of education. So that's quite good. You want five, and these are basically the five that I've told them, so that works really well for me. And one of the things I say, so this is going to sort of span sort of two, three, four and five, is that we should teach well and teach securely and teach for recall and teach for the long term. So anyway, so number two is to teach well, but I mean, obviously that's not really a tip. Hey, teach well. So but under that rubric is, be super clear about what you want children to learn. You know, really super clear, much clearer than you think you need to be. So think about what's tricky. What are you assuming they already know? Break it down into steps. And then get each step and break that down into steps. And then get each step and think, yeah, can I break it down more? Because we have the curse of the expert, and it seems so obvious to us. So let's have an example. So yeah, where does this usually go wrong? How can I preempt that? You know, how can I be proactive? So let's take the example of fractions, since you're a maths teacher. And, you know, say you want them to add fractions. Well, let's think about that. Have we thought about, when we say add fractions, do we mean adding fractions with the same denominator or different denominators? Do we mean the same numerator? And let's be really super clear about what exactly it is. Okay, say we're going to say, all right, no, actually, we're going to start off with the same denominator. Fine, what does denominator actually mean? And this is where just giving them a definition won't particularly help. I mean, maybe along the line we can, but like it's too, like the definition's harder than the concept, frankly. So, and when you think about denominators, the key things are, they're not natural numbers. I mean, I wouldn't use this language with kids, but for us to understand, they're not natural numbers, they're rational numbers. That's why kids find them hard, because they, all the way along, they've learned that, you know, one more goes up in value by one. And now we come to some other numbers where that doesn't work. Of course, that's going to confuse them. Of course it is. They've been brainwashed in that for like 7 or 8 years when we first start doing that. And all of a sudden we go, no, it doesn't work like that. Well, they're going to find that really confusing, because it's like completely going, oh no, now it doesn't work like that. Well, that's because it's not, you know, they're rational numbers. They're not the same. So we have to make a big, you know, a really preempt the fact they're going to find that hard. And so there's that, but there's also this whole thing about the word whole. Like we haven't, like you've got a little kid, haven't you? We don't go 1, 2, 3. Oh, 3 is a whole number. We don't say, by the way, these things you're talking about, they're whole numbers. We just all of a sudden start going, oh yeah, holes. And of course, there's also hole, like a hole in the ground. So that's confusing anyway. But, you know, whole, what does that mean, a whole number? And we're going to get a big thing about what we mean by a whole number. So all the numbers we've been talking about before, they were whole. But, you know, sometimes things aren't whole numbers. And, you know, your kid, he probably, how old are you now?
3.
But does he go, I'm 3 and a half? You know, like they do go, like I'm 3 and 2. Yeah. They do like that sort of label. So they do sort of know that. They do sort of know, or I've got half a biscuit or something like that. They sort of know something about that. But making a big deal, and this can be, you know, kids who are 13 might not quite have ever got that, and we just assume they have. But what do we mean by a whole number, and what's not a whole number? So really being super, super clear. And then also in fractions, a whole what? Because sometimes we think a whole, and we just assume it's one. But of course, we know in fractions, it's not always one. And sometimes a whole, and then we talk about, there's a whole numbers, but there's also the whole of a fraction. So we go, you know, when you talk definitions of fractions, you go, oh, what's the whole? But a whole doesn't have to be one, does it? So you might say, and a whole doesn't even have to be a whole number. That's really complicated, because you might say, what's 2/3 of a quarter? Well, what's the whole? And the whole's a quarter, but like a quarter isn't a whole number. Like, it's confusing. So unless you know how confusing it is and have really thought about that, then it will all unravel quite quickly. So like, yeah. What is a whole number? And just the basics, you know, fraction. What does fraction mean? Fraction, it comes from Latin. It's about breaking something. So here's a number, like number 2. And we can break it into pieces. There we are. Or we usually call them parts rather than pieces in maths, for whatever reason. But look, and then, so you've got the idea of a whole. You've got the idea of parts. But then, and this is really key, kids don't necessarily know what an equal part is, because they think equals means here comes the answer, and some kids will really struggle with that. They really don't get what an equal part is, or equal group. So these numbers, and each is a key number in maths that you really need to understand. And believe me, I've had kids of 11 or 12 or something who don't really get each. I mean, not most kids are fine, but some kids don't get whole, don't get each, and don't get equal. So unless you preempt all of that and have really thought about it and really done stuff to preempt that, you will get into trouble. So preempt it, really know what you'll be super clear about what you want to teach. So I've just used fractions as an example. It could be in English, or it could be about what is a sentence. People go crazy because kids are like, why aren't you using full stops? Well, probably because they don't know what a sentence is. Like, they don't really understand what a sentence is, and it's quite a tricky concept, actually. So you need to do lots of, and I should have said this for fractions as well, examples, but also non-examples. So I've divided this into 2 pieces. This is equal groups, this is not equal groups. You know, examples, non-examples. This is a sentence, this is not a sentence. So it's a fragment, so it's not yet a sentence. We need to add more words before it becomes a sentence. So identifying misconceptions, examples and non-examples. In sentences, some kids don't realise that, you know, he ran is a sentence, because they have the misconception. that sentences have to have quite a lot of words, and like two isn't enough. So be super clear about what you're going to teach. That is tip number two.
Right, let's dig into this a little bit. First thing to say is I love it. Second thing to say is I often say on when I'm speaking to primary colleagues, you could not pay me to be a primary teacher. And I'm discovering this now, as I say, with my little boy. Like trying to get my head around numbers. I remember when I spoke to Helen Williams on my Mr. Bart Maths podcast, mm-hmm. we had a big discussion about what is three. And I'm like, just 1, 2, 3. And she's, yeah, but it could be counting. It's the concept of three, threeness. I'm like, oh my God. Like, don't get me started.
Yeah, no, it's really complicated.
Oh, but then as you say, you're now talking about fractions. And I say fortunately, like luckily when I teach students in year seven, they've got, you know, a decent awareness of something like fractions. But to start that from square one, flipping heck, as you say, thinking about wholes, each equal parts and so on. But this will be true for any concept that secondary colleagues teaches, you know, a new
one. And I bet you have some secondary kids who haven't really got those things.
Yeah, exactly.
They were sort of flying under the radar. They might have some things that are fine, that are sort of at an appropriate level, but somewhere underneath, there's some really basic concepts that are really shaky, like place value. My husband he's a retired now, maths intervention teacher for younger kids, mainly primary age kids. And he did this sort bit of research on language and about place value. And kids didn't understand value. Well, you know, value means cheap in supermarkets, doesn't it? So, you know. But place, didn't understand place either. So, like, or column. He was like, oh, God, this is so complicated.
So it's a nightmare. So I guess my question is, because this curse of knowledge is obviously an absolute, you know, disaster waiting to happen this for many teachers. Well, how do you find practically you can do this? So talking about your fraction example there, which I think is a really nice one, how can teachers do that for any concept they're teaching? Is it a case of, you know, write out the solution to a problem and then try and think how they know how to get from line one to line two? Or are there different strategies? What's the practical
I think it's right at the beginning, if you think about where does, I mean, obviously it doesn't work if you're brand new teaching because you won't know, but if you've been teaching a while, where does it always go wrong? Like we know fractions always goes wrong because people don't understand what a denominator is. And therefore, that's why they add different denominators, because they don't really understand that. And then you think, well, why don't they understand that? What is it? And it's not just, well, I've told them they can't do it. So they need to understand why it doesn't work. And the reason why it doesn't work, and this is tricky, because, I mean, we're probably not going to use the language of natural and rational number, but it is actually a number, you know, it's not actually a number in, like, a common or garden number, how those of us who aren't maths teachers would think about it. It's not referring to a quantity, is it, really? It's to a ratio. And that means it operates differently. So therefore, we have to unpick that. And then to unpick, you know, what are we actually getting at is about when we're dividing something, and that's get to the whole. So what is this something that we're dividing? And we use the word whole in a rather cavalier fashion. And we're dividing it. All right, kids generally get dividing. But we're dividing it equally, okay? And I don't know why kids, because you think, you know, fairness and things like that, but honestly, that's a real stumbling block for kids. And they really do need to see the examples on examples. So I think it's like backward thinking from where does it go wrong? Why is it going wrong? And if you can, I think try and explain it. Like if you're a maths teacher, go and get, I don't know, a French teacher or someone and go, let me teach you fractions. Like, did you find fractions hard? Or your partner or somebody who isn't a maths teacher. Like, or somebody who doesn't know this stuff as well as you do. Did you find this hard at school? Let me explain it to you. And be brutally honest. Like, don't do that glazing eyes where you start going, yeah, I understand. If you don't, like, tell me. It's really worth doing. It's really, really worth going, especially if you know it. What are the things that always go wrong? Fractions always goes wrong. Negative numbers always goes wrong. Sentences always goes wrong. Tenses in languages always go wrong. Well, in English, for that matter, as well, always go wrong. You know, just find out what those things are, and then spend a lot of time unpicking why, and then proactively teach for it.
Right, let me ask you one more, and it's a terrible question this, Claire. Let me just ask you one more follow-up to this. Let's imagine you're a brand new teacher, so you've no experience to fall back on, and for whatever reason, you've got no mates, you've got no supportive partner you can teach fractions to. What are you going to do there? How can kind of novice teachers
Well, you know, I'm saying, well, obviously your school will have a brilliant curriculum that will have preempted that all for you. But I suppose you're saying that that doesn't happen either. You still have to just break it down, break it down, break it down, break it down. They're like, break it into steps, break each step into steps, and then think, well, surely there's nothing more to know. You know, three is three. It's like, no, there's more to know. Like, break it down until it's ridiculous, and then think, oh, okay.
It's hard, isn't it? Because I do a lot of talking about, some people call this atomization or whatever label you want to put on it. And the kickback you always get from teachers is, well, I don't have time. Like, if you want me to break it down this much, I'm never going to actually get to teach the thing because I'm going to be spending all my time doing each of these minor components. Well, what's your response to something like that?
It's like, well, do you want to teach it or do you want them to learn it? You know? And I will get into this when I go to a robust culture of retrieval, which is tip number five. It's like, the key is that the kids learn it, not that you get to the end and go, well, I've taught it now. Stupid kids didn't learn it. It's all their fault. So, like, it's not just about you getting to the end of a course. It's about them actually learning it. And if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. And actually, in PISA, you know, the big international assessment, the Japanese kids in, you know, they take it at 15, and so in the maths, they only do something like two-thirds of, I can't remember if it's two-thirds or three-quarters, anyway, not all, I think it's three-quarters, anyway, a fraction that's greater than half of the syllable, of the syllabus. They haven't taught it all by the time I do the test, and yet they come third in the world. And so even though there's like a quarter of it, or is it a third? Whatever. That they haven't done, they ace it and do much better than everywhere else because what they have learnt, they know really securely.
Got it. Okay, Claire, what is tip number three, please?
Tip number three is, so we've talked about teaching well, teaching securely. So this is checking for understanding. So which again, sounds really, really obvious, but this is getting away from your teacher who's going, but I've got to get through the whole conveyor belt curriculum. Mark McCourt talks about that it's a train leaving the station, to mix my metaphors. It's going, and like we just have to carry on because we won't get to the end. But actually, well, that's pointless because again, it's about what they're learning, not about what you're teaching. And it's better that what you have taught, they've learnt, than you can just go, well, I've taught it. Hey, not my fault if I didn't learn it. So checking for understanding, lots of ways of doing that. I love Tom Sherrington says the simple sentence of saying, instead of saying, do you understand? If you say, do you understand? Like most kids will go, yeah. Because for two reasons, either they're too embarrassed to say, no, not really. Or they think they do understand. You know, and maybe they do, maybe they don't. So he says, just flip that on your head and ask the question, what do you understand? Hey, so Craig, what do you understand about what a denominator is? So Michelle, what do you understand? So, and then, you know, don't just ask one person. Don't just ask one person, think, oh, well, he's got it, so therefore everyone's got it. So it being really forensic about checking for understanding. And then, of course, you check for understanding, and when, you know, if they all do understand, great, good to go. But when you find that they don't, or some students don't, then you flex your teaching in response. That you address the fact that they can't. So that might be in the moment, or you might go, I am going to have to mentally park that because nearly everyone else has got it. Those two haven't. Yeah, I do need to carry on, but I've banked that to do something at some point with them soon, really soon. Maybe within the lesson, it may be after the lesson, an intervention, whatever. But you're not just ignoring it. So you're flexing your teaching from the information. Now, how would you do that? Key things are using whiteboards. And there's a big thing on Twitter at the moment with lots of primary school teachers going, I can't believe people are going whiteboards. We've been using them for 20 years, for heaven's sake. Yeah, well, good for you. Brilliant. You carry on doing that. Not everybody has, believe me, they haven't. And some secondary schools have, some secondary schools haven't. Maybe some primary schools haven't. So if you have, good for you. If you haven't, you're missing a trick. You need to be using whiteboards so that you can see in the moment, you can see what people are doing and how they're doing, how they've done. So that you can flex your teaching. There's also, you know, this is from the Teach Like a Champion playbook, what is called cold calling, which I think is a really unfortunate name because it sounds, I mean, you know, it's just meant to be like, you know, cold calling is when people phone up and try and sell you double glazing, isn't it? That's where it comes from. But people just see it as cold and see it's about catching kids out and it can make kids anxious. Like, cold calling isn't any of those things. It only thrives in a classroom culture that's warm and supportive, which where error is seen as useful, like, you know, kids feel safe to make mistakes and see them as useful, and where they understand that you asking them a question without them volunteering the answer, it's like they expect to be asked questions, is because you care about them and about their learning. So that's what cold calling is. I talked about this, so that, you know, whiteboards, cold calling. I talked about this a bit with literacy. Call and response is a really underused mechanism. So, you know, what are we going to do now? We're going to do questions 1 to 5, or whatever it is. So they know, you know, we're all going to do that. We all know that. And then show call, which is a variation on cold calling. It's the same thing, but that's where you're sharing a piece of writing or a piece of something written. And then critic. So probably not so much a math thing. Well, it could be, I suppose. It could be like, let's look at your steps where you've worked something out. Or a piece of writing, put it onto the visualizer and or whatever, you've got to be able to do that. And then really analyze it and critique it and make it better. Make it even better. You know, it's probably fine. It's good. And again, but these all require classrooms with warm, supportive ethos where, you know, you don't have kids rolling their eyes or laughing or smirking because somebody's made a mistake. Like, you have no tolerance for that whatsoever. So, yeah. What do you understand? Checking for understanding, being really forensic. And it might not be, it might not necessarily be, oh, no, that's tip number 4. I was going to say it might be after the lesson, but I've remembered. No, shh, wait.
This is great. Okay, well, let me just dig into this a little bit. I'm obsessed with checking for understanding class. It's right up my street there. So just a couple of things. I like Doug Lamarve. Again, we're both huge fans. I think it's tip number 1 in Teach Like a Champion 2.0, and then he shifted it a little bit longer in 3.0, where he has either reject or now he says replace self-report, because that's your classic thing where, as you say, do you understand? What I like that Doug does there is he says, if you find yourself wanting to say, do you understand? That's really good, because you've recognised that it's the right point in the lesson where you need a check for understanding. And then you can step in and do something like you've said with Tom Sherrington's idea of just, it's not a massive change to your teaching, is it? You've recognised it's the point in the lesson to do it.
Yeah.
You've just got to make sure it's an actual check of understanding and not a check of students' perception of understanding. So I really like that.
I also like, Adam Boxer wrote this brilliant thing. It's like, this is a real, like, oh yeah. But, you know, when we understand something in the moment, you get this sort of endorphin rush and it feels good. Like, oh, yeah, like when it clicks and it feels great. And so, like, you think, oh, I understand that now because you've had this feeling. And so, but your memory, when you go back to it, it's like, yeah, well, I understand that. Now, what you're remembering is the feeling of understanding it. Now, but understanding is dependent on remembering it. So you can't understand something and have forgotten it. But you might go, but I understand that. Well, you know, what you're remembering is the feeling of understanding it, not actually understanding it. And the two are different.
That's lovely. I've never thought of that distinction. That's really, really nice. I really like that. And my second and final just point on this, this is something I discussed with Jo Morgan, a secondary maths teacher. She said that a lot of the emphasis on check for understanding and responsive teaching is on the checking for understanding and not so much on the responding. And you've alluded to this point yourself. Like, if you do the check and it reveals that there's a problem, you've got to then respond to it. If you just crack on regardless, there's no point in doing the check for understanding.
Oh, gosh, they don't know that.
But it's a thing, isn't it, right? Like, if you've put all your thought into the check for understanding and you haven't thought, all right, what am I going to do if it goes this way or this way? It's problematic, isn't it?
And that's why that goes back to my earlier point about being super clear about what you want to teach. So, again, you know, you've got your teacher saying, well, I'm not going to go right back because that would be ridiculous. So, okay, maybe you're not, but then you check for understanding. You're like, oh, maybe I do need to go right back. But you know what that right back goes to. So it'd be like, oh, God, they don't even know what each means, you know? Like, or, you know, what is going wrong here? All right, I know that because I've got that. I know what the likely things that could have gone wrong have gone wrong. And I've checked for understanding and it's like, oh, okay. Back we go. But yeah, I really like Mark McCourt's phrase about conveyor belt teaching, and that we shouldn't be doing that. And somebody, I don't know if it was him, somebody said, we're teachers, not broadcasters. So, you know, when you broadcast the program, it just carries on regardless, doesn't it? And that's why teaching during lockdown was hard, because you didn't get, you were sort of in broadcast mode, and that checking for understanding was much harder. You know, particularly if you weren't allowed to have cameras on, or particularly if it wasn't even live teaching, if it was asynchronous teaching, it was really hard. So you couldn't check for understanding, and you were in broadcast mode, and kids caught what they caught, but you know, it was suboptimal. To put it mildly. So, yeah, we're teachers, not broadcasters, which means we're checking for understanding and we're flexing in the moment and responding to that, because we are super clear about what they want to know. We know what the misconceptions are, and we can pivot.
Fantastic. Okay, Claire, what is tip number four, please?
So this is, again, so this is more about checking for understanding. This is after the lesson. So after the lesson, you know, you're going to look at their books, and maybe in maths they ticked as they go. I think it works really well when they do four and then check with their, either check because you give them the answer, you know, for independent work they might check and then you give them the answers, or check and when with a group. I love this when, you know, check with a group. Have you all got the same answer? Probably it's right then, because you probably haven't all made the same mistake, probably. But if, you know, if there's a difference in the group, then let's work out who's got it wrong. And maybe it's the three have got it wrong and the one's got it right. But, you know, anyway, so that's a by the by. Sorry. So that's really from the previous one. But so when you check their work afterwards, then again, you need to do something about it. And it's going to go, oh, God, they couldn't do that. Never mind. Next week, it's area. So cracking on, or, you know, Macbeth or whatever. You know, so what do you do? So what you don't do most of the time is marking. Because, and why don't you do that? And it's not really even about workload. It's a bit about workload, but actually it's because it's not very effective. When I was learning to drive, I wasn't very good at parallel parking. Now, what my driving instructor didn't do was then go, how am I going to help you with your parallel parking? And there was only one of me, of course. She wasn't trying to teach 30 people all at once to parallel park. But what she didn't do is go, I'm going to write you a little mini essay here explaining how to parallel park, and then I would read it and go, oh right, that's what I should be doing. You know, it's like, it's really unlikely to be helpful, isn't it? You know, why is writing an explanation? Why don't you just tell them the explanation? And as we know, most of the time the problems are pretty similar that kids are coming into. So when children can't do something, and most of the time when they try and do something, you know, if they haven't done it, it's not because they're being perverse. If they haven't done it, it's because they don't know how to. So they don't need feedback. Like, they do not need feedback. What they need is more teaching. That's what they need. So you do a lesson, you think, oh blimey, they can't do whatever. Then what do you do next lesson? Or, you know, a third of them can't do that. Well, we're going to do that again then. You know, not necessarily for the whole lesson, but we are going to do some of a lesson doing some of it, rather than just thinking, I know, I'm going to write it down. I'm going to write it down for Craig. I'm going to write it down again for Alison. I'm going to write it down again for Abel. And then I'm going to write something else. Da, 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 da. That's crazy. To get workload, it's just really ineffective. It's also really bad on workload as well. And that's important, not just because it's nice to be nice to teachers. Of course it is. But it's like, if you're, you know, all choices have opportunity costs. If you're spending your time marking, you're not thinking about misconceptions, you're not being thinking about how you can be super clear. Yeah, you know, you're not thinking about how you're going to check for understanding of the lesson, or what you're going to do if they can't do something. And that's be a much better use of your time than spending ages marking work. So yeah, if they can't do something, they don't need feedback, they need teaching most of the time. I mean, there's a place for some sort of feedback, but, you know, it has to be within their power to act on it. So I don't know if you've had this, but, you know, when you had to give them the next step or the target, and the target is learn something I haven't taught you yet. Well, it's not in their power to do anything about, is it? So that's pointless. So it's much better to go, your feedback is, do you know what? If you did your homework, that might help. Or, you know, maybe you should sleep some more, or come to school on time. You know, those sort of things are in their power. I mean, I know it's not in all kids' power. I get that. Some kids have super challenges in their lives. But, you know, for most kids, there are things they can actually do. Maybe if you learnt your tables, you'd find maths a lot easier. Just saying. So give them, you know, if you're giving them feedback, it's got to be, it's not on what you've just taught them generally, because there's not much, that's for you. The feedback when you look at their books is for you as a teacher. So you know what it's called, AFL, and Assessment for Learning? Yeah, well, actually, a lot of it isn't Assessment for Learning, it's Assessment for Teaching. So, but there is Assessment for Learning, and actually it is useful to say things like, your table knowledge is really getting in the way here. That could really help you, you know? So let's do something about that. It is really useful to give them metacognitive strategies to check their work. So, for example, and these will be, you know, I'm not talking about Key Stage 4 here, but, you know, like if you add some numbers together, you can add them up in a different order to check, because it should be the same answer. Ta-da! The quick checking mechanism to check your own work. You can use the inverse to check. So, you know, do your work and then check it, and have that, those sort of routines that you are going to check. If you're doing long multiplication, what's the thing that everyone forgets when they do long multiplication? Oh, they forget the zero in the second line, or the two zeros in the third line, or whatever. Like, what's the thing that everyone does? Oh, yeah, check that. Oh, and this one, this will be, you'll like this one for Key Stage 4. Oh, Key Stage 5. Any key stage, this is a thing. Units. Units, 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 units. Is this a measures question? Yes. Has it got units in? Yes. Might the examiner, tester, whoever has set the question have, you know, deliberately mixed up meters and kilometers? Probably, because they're just like that. They want to check. I'm going to check forensically the units. I will just do that. Whenever it says units, I will go through a question and I'll put a big, I don't know, I have a code to myself. I'll do a big pink circle or something around it. And that will remind me that when I check, it's like, this is a units question. I'm likely to make a mistake with this. Integration. Right. Oh, God. Add the zero. I will make that mistake. As soon as I read integration, I'll put a big sign to myself. Is it not? Is it add zero? Add C, sorry, whatever it is. What do you do with integration? Add C. Yeah, whatever it is. The thing that you do that everyone forgets to do. So, yeah, teaching them self-checking mechanisms, fine. That works. So a bit of metacognitive feedback, but feedback is more, is really for you, not for them.
I like it. I like a controversial one, Claire, and I like this. Forget the feedback. Do the reteaching if they don't know. I like this. So let's dig into this a little bit more. So the first thing to say is I've made this mistake many a time, where I've had a big pile of books on a Sunday, and I'm having to mark them, and I the first book gets a load of my attention, loads of written feedback, blah, blah, blah. Second book, slightly less attention because I'm getting knackered now. Third book, so on. And then what will happen? By the time I get to like the 15th book, not only can I not be bothered anymore, but also I've spotted the same mistake again and again and again. And if I'd have known that from the start, I wouldn't have bothered writing all this feedback, because it would have signaled that this is a whole class issue. So yeah. No point writing in the individual books. Let's just, you know, reteach it. So I think one thing that I've certainly found useful was having a quick flick through all the books first, just in case you can identify a bit of a common trend, before you start diving in forensically one book at a time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's absolutely key. And, you know, if you get some outlier who's done something really bizarre, fine, you know? Yeah, I still, maybe writing isn't going to be the thing. It might be. It's not like it's banned forever and a day. But, like, as your go-to strategy, it's a really weak strategy.
I agree. Right, let me ask you an awkward question about this then. So I always like to kind of play devil's advocate a bit on this show. So let's go awkward. So what you're kind of hoping for when you mark is either everybody's got it right, because then you're laughing, or everybody's got it wrong in the same way, because then you can do your whole class feedback.
Yeah.
But let's take the extreme scenario. Let's imagine half the class have got it right, half the class have got a question wrong. What are you going to do there? Because if you teach the whole class it again, it feels like you're a bit of a disservice to the ones who know it. But then if you just try and teach a small section, what on earth are the rest of the class going to do? How does that play out?
Well, I think you can go either way. And I don't say it's not a problem, but I think people overdo it as a problem. And I think that actually overlearning is really good. So it's not going to kill the half who got it right to sit through it again. It really isn't. It's like, oh, good for you. And actually, this is going to help you. And I've tried You know, we know when you read something, you think, oh, where was that? And I've tried to find it and haven't been able to find it. That's really annoying. But there was a, it was this paper about A-level maths. And, you know, typically the jump from GCSE to A-level maths is quite a shock to the system for kids. And what they found, they've got these high-flying kids who've got all their grades, whatever's, seven pluses, whatever. But actually, their understanding of things like fractions or algebra or whatever isn't as secure as you'd think. Because they've been able to do stuff and they've been stretched and challenged and pushed on to the next one and the next one and the next one and the next one. And actually, you've done them a misservice because you're going, oh, they can do a few, so they're fine. And they don't really, they've got a superficial understanding. They've got a really depth understanding of it. And actually, they could have done better had they really been, you know, we've done them to death. We've done them, made sure they really, 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 really had a secure understanding. So that overlearning actually will probably really benefit them. So it isn't the terrible thing. Though, you know, there might be occasions, there might be some kids that's like, no, really, 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 they do get it. They really do get it. And I don't think, you know, there are strategies you can use. You can be like, if you got it, if you really, really, really got it, here's another one to be getting on with. You know, here's something you can be practicing. I'm going to be talking to everyone else. You're going to be dead quiet because I'm not going to help you. So this is for most people. But if you really think you've really got this, fine. Here you are. Crack on with this. So.
Got it. Okay, Claire. Fifth and final tip, please.
So my last one is have a robust culture of retrieval, quoting Adam Boxer again. That is just because you've taught it. You've taught it well. You were super clear about what you wanted to learn and you taught it securely, so you checked for understanding, not just in the lesson but after the lesson. But just because they've learnt it doesn't mean they'll know it in a month's time or 3 months time or a year's time. And this is, and Adam Boxer writes brilliantly about this, so I'm basically channeling Adam Boxer here. But human, like, forgetting is completely normal. It's forgetting is not some irritating thing that children do to wind us up or because they're feckless or whatever. Forgetting is human. Like when humans learn stuff, they forget it almost immediately. We know that. Like it's a scientific fact that humans forget stuff. So we shouldn't be shocked or disappointed or surprised or disheartened by the fact that what we teach will be forgotten. Like it just will be. That's just normal and human. It's inevitable. So therefore we need to plan to interrupt the forgetting through doing retrieval practice. Now that should be, you know, whether that you do that in a starter or some other way in your lesson, I don't think there's a million ways of doing it. I would say that at a secondary school level, that most of your homework should be based on that. Maybe not all, but most of it should be based on that. But, you know, you do need to be going over what we learned yesterday, what we learned last week, what we learned last month, what we learned way back when. Let's do some way back when stuff as well. And then again, you're checking for understanding or checking for checking they still understand it. And of course, if they can't remember it, they won't be able to understand it. Or they might remember being able to understand it. And then you get, so what you're going to say to me is, what about all the teachers who go, but I don't have time? And this is where we talk about my leaky pipe analogy, okay? So because human beings are leaky, they are leaky learners. We teach them stuff and it leaks out their brains. So imagine you were told to build a pipe between point A and point B, a pipe to carry water. And you built this pipe and you could see that the pipe was leaking. But you thought, well, I haven't got time to go back and fix the pipe. I don't care about the pipe. I just want to get from A to B. And then you get to A to B and your pipe's, there we are, ta-da, I've done it. I've done my pipe. Oh dear, not much water coming through because so much is leaking out. Whereas somebody else never gets from A to B. They get sort of 2/3 of the way to B or 3/4. I'm obsessed with those two numbers. Anyway, they get most of the way. But what they do, the reason why they don't get there is because they do go back and fix the pipe. So actually, they get more water further than somebody who just cracks on and is really thinking about themselves and really thinking about looking good rather than actually being good. And rather being good is actually making sure that the learning is revisited and isn't forgotten, because we're all leaky learners. So don't blame the pipes. Don't blame the pipes for forgetting or for leaking. Like, you, it's your job to notice the leaking and to do something about it.
I love it. All right, two things I absolutely love straight away here. So firstly, I really like that emphasis that forgetting's normal. I like that. I think that's something that doesn't get emphasized enough between teachers, but also teachers communicating that to kids. So I'm a big, big fan of that. I absolutely adore this leaky pipe. I'm all over that one. That's a really, really, really solid analogy. I really like that. My only follow-up question is, I'm really interested in retrieval opportunities inside and outside of lessons. So I completely agree with you that homework's a really good time to do retrieval. And I've made the mistake for many years in having topic-themed homeworks based on what the kids have just done, and it's fine, but they tend to do quite well on them. And then you think, oh, fantastic, don't have to worry about that again. But I call it this, like, the illusion of mastery. You think they've got it, but they've only got it in the moment and so on. So I think moving away from topic-specific homeworks to always, as a minimum, having at least some kind of revision or recap section in each homework is a good idea. But the problem with homeworks, and again, this is a cultural thing, is quite a few kids don't essentially take them all that seriously. Maybe they either don't do them, or they rush them, or they copy, or they just do the questions they can do. So then a lot of teachers think, okay, I know, well, I'm going to shift my retrieval opportunities into the lesson instead. But then, of course, then you're eating up into kind of curriculum time. And it feels to me retrieval should be, in an ideal world, done outside of the lesson, because, the teacher can then focus on teaching the new stuff. And if they can collect information in about what kids know and don't know about prior learned stuff, they can address it. But I just think, and I don't know if it's the same in primary, but homework, it feels like the ideal opportunity for retrieval, but it never seems to work as well as it does in theory, if that makes sense.
I think it comes back down to, and I think this is a more of a secondary thing. I think that homework in primary is, you know, is more contentious, and, you know, personally, I do think that in primary schools it should be about reading every day for sure, and it should be about things like, it should be about retrievals, it should be about number bonds and times tables, and maybe as they get older towards upper key stage two, it can be some of the other stuff, like in some of the other subjects, retrieval practice. I do think, but for secondary, I don't think there's a question about it. It should be, retrieval practice should be the sort of the mainstay, not of every single piece, but of homework. And it needs a whole school culture that it is taken seriously. But it's, you know, if it's going to be taken seriously, that's a whole school thing. And you need, if you're going to say, right, so the mainstay of our homework is going to be, we're going to have a really robust culture of retrieval. Well, the culture of retrieval is, we're going to have a platform that we're going to use, or platforms that we're going to use. There are going to be consequences if you don't do it. It's going to be checked up on. You know, if you don't do it, that's an issue. But that only works if everyone's doing it. Everybody knows what you're meant to do, and there are genuine consequences for not doing it. I don't know if you know, it sounds like this is a paean to Adam Boxer, which in a way it is, but the platform he uses is Carousel. Not so, like maths, there's loads of other things. So I wouldn't, you know, maths, you've got your Pegati or Sparks is now, isn't it? And yeah, here's your one. And there's, what's the other one? What's the other one? Dr.
Frost,
Dr. Frost, not Dr. Frost. Anyway, there's loads of things out there for maths, but so they're all fine. But what Carousel does really well for other subjects, and again, it wouldn't work for every single subject, but it has, so the kids write, and again, so it's not a math thing really, but they have to write answers. It's not, but it has got some multiple choice, but it's not mainly multiple choice. So they write an answer. So, you know, what's photosynthesis? It's plants and sun, they write. Okay. Obviously not a very good answer. And then they have to judge for themselves if they've, and then it gives them the answer, and they have to see if they've written it correctly or not. And then they think, yeah, it's not really correct, is it? It's sort of on the way to being correct. And then they can do it again. And the idea is they will carry on doing it, because they will get given the answer, do the answer, get given the answer, have a go at doing it again. Teacher can see all of that, and then it feeds into the starter for the next lesson. So the starter for the next lesson, it goes into whiteboard mode, and then you can go, well, here's an answer that Craig put up, or you know, you can do it anonymously. Somebody put photosynthesis, it's plants and sun and stuff. And we can critique that. Again, go back to our show call. We can critique that. Like, it's on the way to being right, but how can we make that better, better, better? And so then kids can see that actually what you're doing for homework, it absolutely is feeding into the lesson. It is absolutely is doing that. So there's a real purpose towards it. It's easy for teachers to set. It's easy for teachers to check. And it's purposeful. So if it's a whole school culture behind it, then I think that whole thing, and I haven't been a secondary school teacher, so, you know, what do I know? Maybe you go, yeah, Claire, you don't understand. But I do know, having talked to schools where they do it well, if you have a whole culture behind it, and, you know, when things don't work, it's because the systems haven't been, you know, it's going back to being super clear for teachers, making it easy. Easy for teachers to set, easy for teachers to check, easy for kids to know. So they don't have, do you know, in some schools you have about 59 different logins. Like if it's maths, it's this login. If it's history, it's this login. You know, it's Google Classroom for this. It's Sparks for this. It's, I don't know. Well, what's another one? I don't know.
Century, I can't
think
of
what they are now. Quizlet, something else. Yeah, da, 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 da. You know, you need, that's all your brain power worked out just to work out which blooming platform you're on. Make it easy. Like, keep it super clear, super easy. Parents can check. You know, parents can check. You can, teachers can check, kids can, they have to go, I didn't have my login. Like Carousel, you didn't even need a login. So, yeah, make it easy.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Well, I'll tell you what, Claire, they are five absolutely fantastic tips. So once again, I've made a ton of notes for the benefit of the video viewers here. It's tons to think about here. Absolutely fantastic. So let me hand back over to you now. What should listeners check out of yours?
Well, I can look at my blog. And it's called, it's www.primarytimery, so it's nice. primarytimery.com. And it's got primary in because I'm a primary teacher by trade, but there's loads in it. You don't have to be a primary teacher to benefit from it because there's loads in there. I've just done like, my latest blogs on assessment, for example. That is pretty much cross-phase, and now I'm working cross-phase anyway. So that would be my my main thing that I'd say listen to. You don't listen to it because it's a blog, but, well, you read it, you don't listen to it, sorry. I edited the research ed guide to the curriculum, so I mean I only wrote the forewords and chose the people to write things, but that's there's some really good pieces in that, not least the final chapter by Christine Council, which is the tour de force. So they would be my two main things I'd say of mine. Do you mean of mine or do you mean other people? Because I meant
to be yours. That's perfect. No, all about you this last bit. So yeah, that's the least I can do. So yeah, we'll put links to both of those, in the show notes page. Well, Claire, this has been an absolute pleasure. I've learned absolutely loads. It's been practical, interesting, engaging. It's been brilliant. So thank you so much for giving up your time to speak to us.
No problem. That's been great talking to you, Craig.